Thank you so much, Padre Fugu. It's just an honor to be here with you. I've known you since that time that I came to Chaupati in 2002, and ever since then you've been a guide, a friend, an inspiration, and I'm very happy to be here with you today. I felt I should be interviewing you because you are actually my senior, but somehow it ended up the other way. So I'm happy to be here with you, Guru. Hare Krishna.
Yes, I would like to introduce him more as a humble person, trying to give credit to others. So let's begin, Maharaj, with this unique element of your spiritual journey. I was told that in the year 2002, you came to India first, not the first time, but the very first time for a spiritual journey. Around 6 months, you traveled across India, Mayapur, Vrindavan, spent time in ISKCON, Chaupati, went to Pune. Can you share some of your experiences, your wisdom you learned in that trip?
Yeah, just to rewind a little bit, I guess I was coming to the temple from birth, but in the mid-90s, when I was about 15 years old, I had somehow a spiritual hunger was growing within me, and I began reading Bhagavad Gita, I began chanting, and I joined the Pandava Sena. And then throughout my teenage and university years, I was just having more and more association with devotees. We know how dangerous devotee association can be in a spiritually good way. So it was creating a hunger within me. And by the time I graduated, I was 21, and I just decided that I needed to take some time out. I couldn't just go into the working world. This Krishna consciousness was capturing my mind, and I thought I have to explore it further. And I had a dual reason to come to India. One reason was just that I needed to get out of London because it was becoming very difficult, very intense, naturally. There were many expectations from friends and family that I would go straight into a job. And when I decided I wanted to explore monastic life, it was quite difficult. So I thought I need to get out of here and go to another space where I can really concentrate better. So that was one thing that was moving me out of London. And then I was being drawn towards India. For two reasons. One, because India is the land of spirituality, the land of Vedic culture. And also, we had a very good association with the devotees in Mumbai and Chaupati. And so we thought that would be a good place to go. So yes, in 2002, we came to India and spent 6 months there at that time. And in that 6 months, we were based in Mumbai, in Chaupati, living with the brahmacharis. But then we did go to many different places. We visited Pune, we visited Nasik. I remember going to many other temples, Juhu Temple, Mira Road. And of course, we went to Vrindavan and Mayapur. So really, it was a life-changing 6 months in India. It was incredible.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Maharaj, for reminiscing those wonderful days. I remember I was with you for the short visit you had in Chaupati, and we were going through many places and also many different programs. Thank you, Maharaj, for remembering those beautiful days. Well, all the audience who are with me, please, if you have any questions as we go through this series of wonderful talk between me and Maharaj, you can please post your questions. Maybe some of your questions will be same as what I'm going to ask Maharaj. So I'll club them together. And if there are some different questions, I'll take them in the end. So please keep your chat box on and keep posting us on the Zoom as well as on the YouTube and the Facebook channels. So Maharaj, it's a very beautiful topic to deal with today. Everything changes, but nothing changes. So Maharaj, my first question to you will be, that I see that change is a universal aspect of this world. And Krishna himself, when he comes this material world, he says, Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. He comes. But when he comes, he also is very methodical in his appearance. He does reinstitute dharma. He changes the aspects of dharma, right? Satyuga, different mode of worship. Treta, Dwapar, Kali Yuga. So change is very universal in our life, Maharaj. But often we, when we hear the word change, we always perceive a fear factor. What can that change bring in? So I just want to ask Maharaj, how, why does this happen? That there is always a fear, unknown thing which happens, we perceive when the word change comes in our life.
Yeah, change is usually something people don't like at all. Well, of course, I've gone through a change in recent months, and one of the reasons we thought of this topic was because of that change. Because after accepting the renounced order of life, many people come to me and say, like, how has life changed for you since taking that step? And my answer to them often is that it's a very difficult question to answer, because in one sense, everything has changed. And in another sense, nothing has changed. Everything has changed because naturally, when you step into an ashram like the sannyas ashram, then your social dealings change, your responsibilities change, the kind of interactions you often have with people change. Everything changes in one sense. But then I looked at the person, I said, in another sense, nothing changes, because I still wake up, I still chant the holy name of Krishna, I still try to absorb myself in Bhagavatam and be a menial servant of the devotees. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, that never changes. The sambandha of the relationship we have with Krishna, the abhideya of the practice of Navavida Bhakti that we do every day doesn't change. And our cherished aspiration to develop prema, Shuddha Bhakti, that doesn't change. And so in that sense, nothing changes. And therefore, we have this dual thing going on in life about how the world is constantly changing. But for a devotee, in one sense, they live in an unchanging world. Now, your question about why we fear change so much, I guess there are different ways to look at it. If you look at it in the highest level, we are Satchit Ananda. We're eternal. We're ever existing. We're full of knowledge. We're full of bliss. So in one sense, the soul has a completely steady state. Like, for example, I remember some years ago, I was thinking about fairy tales, and every single fairy tale ends, they lived happily ever after. And if you think about that, they lived happily ever after. To live means to be sentient. So that's chit. To live happily. Happily means ananda. And to live happily ever after means sat, eternity. So in fairy tales, when it says they lived happily ever after, actually what they're identifying is the three qualities of the soul, which is sat, chit, ananda. But we know in the material world, no one lives happily ever after. Because the material world is asat, achit, and nirananda. It's temporary, full of ignorance, and coming with so many difficulties. So I guess the highest level why we fear change is because our very identity is that we're eternal. We're in a state of complete ever-existing eternity. And therefore, the idea of constant change doesn't temporary, transient nature is very alien to us. So I guess on the highest level, that's why we don't like change. I guess when you bring it down to the material level a bit more, the other reason we don't like change is because we get attached very easily to things and we have many attachments. I've noticed how it's so easy for us to get attached. Like, even if you look at devotees in the temple room, when they sit for Bhagavatam class, you'll see that they generally always sit in the same place. Or when they stand in Mangalarti, they stand in the same place. And I was thinking about this one day that, wow, it's so easy for us to become attached. So we have so many attachments. So in one sense, we're eternal, but then we live in a world where we develop so many attachments. And therefore, when things are changing, it feels very alien. It feels very uncomfortable to us. And therefore, we resist change and we don't like change and we fear change. And when change happens, then we think we're at a disadvantage. And so somehow we have to learn to live with change, because constant change is the theme of the world.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, I was just thinking that when I see through your wonderful life in Krishna consciousness, you have been very instrumental in sharing your wisdom, training the Pandav Sena, and also helping the community develop there. And now you are going worldwide, dealing with various devotees. So Maharaj, could you let us know what are the main changes which may happen in a devotee's life that may affect his or her Krishna consciousness? Can some things are very easy going changes, but some could be very challenging also. So some pointers on that, Maharaj.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the world is always changing. Krishna says shashvatam, so everything changes. What kind of things change? Well, in our life, our health will change, that's for sure. You know, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukha dosha nudarshanam. If you fast forward in your life 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you can be sure that there will be some health challenges that will come. So we have to realize this is coming. This is on the cards. Relationships change, isn't it? People come into our life. People leave our life. Relationships that we were of a certain nature at some time, those relationships change even if we're in contact with the same people. Our relationships are constantly changing. The people around us are constantly changing. Our career changes. That has a huge bearing for someone who lives in the material world. You know, you may have to change career. If your career changes, oftentimes that means your location in the world may change. You may find yourself in a different place, away from devotees, away from the community or you're so used to. So all of these things change. Someone's ashram may change. A brahmachari may become a grihastha. A grihastha may find that their children move away and they're moving more in retired life. Someone may take the renounced order of life. Things change. Ashram changes. So these changes are constantly going on. And we have to be aware that life means change. Like, if we bury our heads in the sand and we expect that things won't change in the world, and we don't prepare ourselves for the changes that are about to take place, then when those changes come, then they completely displace us. And then we go into crisis mode. So, like there's one famous English saying that those who sweat in times of peace lose less blood in times of war. And so, if we prepare now our minds that at one point my health will go down, at one point maybe these people who I am so reliant on may not be there, at one point maybe I won't be in this life situation, at one point maybe my abilities, maybe my positions will be taken away from me, we have to prepare for things to change. And another thing I'll say about change change is unstoppable. Definitely, no one can stop it happening. It will, change will happen. But more worrying than that is, or potentially worrying, is that change is unpredictable. You don't know when it will happen. It could be around the corner. It could be tomorrow. We don't know. And the third thing is that change is uncontrollable. We don't know what exactly will change, in what order, and how that change will take place. We may have an idea, but the change could take place in a completely different way. So we live in an unpredictable world. And if devotees are not internally anchoring themselves in the midst of this changing world, then all the changes tend to displace many devotees and create obstacles to their spiritual development. So yeah, this is just something about change.
Thank you, Maharaj. So Maharaj, before, there's another connecting question here for you, but I will just take this opportunity to introduce to my audience here that recently Maharaj has written a beautiful book called as Gita 3. Now, as soon as you hear the word Gita 3, I thought maybe Gita part 3, but there is some mystery behind this number 3. Maharaj, can you just explain what this 3 is all about?
Yes. So this is a new book that we brought out. And yeah, when we say Gita 3, then people say, but I don't have 1 and 2. Can I read 3? So this doesn't mean Gita part 3, but this means looking at the Gita from 3 different angles. And what we do in this book is we go through the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita 3 times. The first time we go through the 18 chapters, the first section is entitled Think Different. So it shows you how every single chapter of the Gita trains you to look at the world in a different way to what we've been taught growing up. The second section of Gita 3 is entitled How To. And what we look at is how in every single chapter of the 18 chapters of the Gita, Krishna teaches you how to do something amazing. If you want to know how to make good decisions, how to be free from stress, how to find love, how to make good decisions, then we show you that through the 18 chapters of the Gita. And in the final section, the third section, is entitled Why Not? And in that section, we look at the 18 main excuses that people give as to why they can't practice spiritual life. And then we show how Krishna systematically in every chapter removes or allays that excuse. And in this way, you go through the Gita 3 times. And what we do with every single chapter is we give you a practical exercise or a reflection or a meditation, which helps you to bring that wisdom into reality, into your own life. So is over, like, I think about 54 exercises as well. Yeah.
That's wonderful, Maharaj. You know, the very thought of going through the Bhagavad Gita in this particular style 3 times, I think that's really great. And personally, I would love to have this book as early as possible in my hands.
I decided 3 times because, you know, generally in Vedic culture, whenever we do something, we do it 3 times. Like we chant a mantra 3 times. We do a parikrama or pradakshina 3 times. Or it's said you're supposed to study the Vedas 3 times. So 3 seems to be a magical number. So I thought, well, maybe it fits, you know.
Maharaj, I don't know. I just bought this query about the book. But here goes your question number 3 now, Maharaj. The third question. So, Maharaj, I was thinking, sometimes as a naive devotee, thinking that the world is anyways going to change, there's a tendency in the life of devotee that they may think that anyways going to change. Why we should focus on stability in life, because things are anyway changing. So in a changing world, we learn from our acharyas, also to be very stable in our Krishna consciousness. So how do we balance that we don't go like a pendulum to be too much attached to the material world and again be very detached to the material world, but balance it out, understand the change, and also be stable in life.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yes, there was one famous social scientist, Maslow, and they talked about the hierarchy of needs. And they said that on the baseline, we have certain physical needs. We need, as they say in Hindi, roti, kapra, makan. We need clothes, shelter, food. Otherwise, we can't survive. And then we need security. We need relationships. We need a sense of achievement. And then later on, we look for self-realization. So if some of these other things are not there in our life, then it's very difficult to focus on Krishna consciousness. So although we know the world is always changing, for example, your health. I remember once in the Brahmacharya Ashram, we asked Prahlad Nanda Maharaj, who was the health minister, to give a talk to the Brahmacharis on health. And you know how he began the class? He said, eat well, exercise well, have good habits, die anyway. So it was quite eye-opening that, yes, does that mean we don't do those things? Of course, we should maintain our health. We should try to take care of the body. But a devotee always knows, ultimately, body is going to go at one point or the other. So the fact that everything changes doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to find as much stability as we can in the present moment. We try to find stability in our ashram, in our relationships, in our health situation, physical and mental, because when we have that stability, then what it helps us to do is develop our connection with Krishna. And when we develop our internal connection with Krishna, when we're anchored in the divine connection with Krishna, then no matter what external changes go on in the world, then later on it won't affect you. And so what we do in Krishna consciousness is, number one, we know everything changes. So number two, what we try to do is at least create some stability. And then in that stability, we try to create an internal connection. And then what happens is that when everything does change in the world, because we've developed that internal connection, we don't get affected, or our Krishna consciousness doesn't get harmed by all of the changes of the world. So yes, as devotees, we should try to find some stability, but we shouldn't think that that stability that we find is the goal. That stability that we're creating in our life is only so that we can create our connection, deep connection with Krishna. Because eventually even the stability that we create will crumble. Because Krishna says, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sata. Of the eternal there's no change, and of the temporary there is no endurance. And whatever situation we create in this world, eventually it will break down. But that situation is still useful if it helps us to develop an inner connection with Krishna. And so everyone needs an anchor in life. And if you don't develop an internal anchor with Krishna, then you will try to anchor your life through the external arrangements of this world. But if you anchor your life through the external arrangements of this world, eventually that anchor will also fail you. Therefore, the only anchor you can create is the anchor with Krishna. And when you are connected in that eternal reality, then no change can affect you. But to create that anchor, having some stability in your life is very, very beneficial and useful.
Yes, Maharaj. Indeed, that was a deep answer, Maharaj. I'm still pondering over the wonderful answer you have given so far. Maharaj, I remember many, many years back, one Prabhupada disciple had come to ISKCON Chowpatty. I don't remember his name, but he had asked me, so, Baladev, how are you? So I just told him, Prabhu, I am struggling. That's a common answer you give to a very senior person who asks a question like that. And he immediately replied to me, are you struggling to stay in the material world or get out of it? So, yes, Maharaj, while we develop stability, try to adjust with the changes, yet we need to be also seeking shelter of Krishna. I remember the Bhagavatam episode of how Vyasa Muni compiled the Vedas, right, for the human beings in Kali Yuga. And then he had to also adjust. He did a fabulous task, but when his spiritual master came and he told him where he fell short of, he had to change his paradigm. And ultimately, in spite of all the stability he had thought of creating for the future, he had to ultimately seek shelter of Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, and move on and to give Bhagavatam to all of us. So Maharaj, yes, as you're mentioning in your last answer that, yes, while we do look for stability in our life, the most important thing is taking shelter of Krishna. I would like to ask you little more in depth. Can you throw more light on how we really can take shelter of Krishna in these changing times?
Yeah. What I'd like to share with you, Baladev Prabhu, and all our devotees on the call, is that from what I've observed, if devotees do a few things in their life, then what can happen is that amongst the inevitable changes that they'll experience and challenges of the material world, they'll be able to continue developing in their relationship with Krishna. And I sum this up in a few sutras, and I'll tell you those sutras. First thing is we need to be emotionally connected. Second thing is we need to be practically balanced. Third thing is we need to be internally committed. Fourth thing is we need to be psychophysically situated. And fifth thing is spiritually inspired. So let me just share with you five of these things. If you do these five things in your life, then you will find you will have incredible resilience in your spiritual journey, even when things around you are constantly unpredictable and changing. The first thing is emotionally connected. Those devotees who have very good relationships with other devotees, honest, open, inspiring, progressive, Krishna conscious, deep relationships with others, in the midst of change, they will be much more equipped to continue on progressively in their journey in Krishna consciousness. Because when we have someone to share our difficulties with, share our problems with, then those problems immediately come into perspective and become manageable to deal with. So if you want to develop resilience in the midst of change, the first thing is be emotionally connected. The second thing is, if you want to develop resilience, be psychophysically situated. What do I mean by that? In the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam, we know there's the famous pastime of Gajendra, who's attracted by the crocodile. And in that fight, which goes on for 1,000 years, Gajendra, who's much more stronger than the crocodile, is becoming weaker. Even though the crocodile is much inferior in strength to Gajendra. And why is Gajendra becoming weaker? Because Gajendra is not an animal of the water. Gajendra is meant to be on the land. And Srila Prabhupada makes the point that when you're fighting or when you're in the midst of the material energy, the war on Maya, then you have to be situated in your right place. Otherwise, you will become weak. And therefore, devotees who are psychophysically situated, they're in the right varna. They have the right career, the right way they're living in the world, and they're situated in the right ashram. Then being situated in the correct varna and ashram can make you much, much more resilient in times of change. You'll be able to deal with much, much more. And so the second thing is be psychophysically situated. The third thing is be practically balanced. When in your life you create a lifestyle in the mode of sattva, Krishna says you can't be a yogi if you eat too much or you eat too little, if you sleep too much or you sleep too little. Krishna says, yukta ahara vihara sya, you have to be balanced in everything. So when you have a balanced lifestyle, then what happens is that your mind and intelligence become much stronger. When your lifestyle is imbalanced, when you're under stress, when you're living in an unnatural way, then what happens is your mind and intelligence become very, very weak. Nietzsche, he says, when you're tired, you give in to ideas that you gave up decades ago. When you're tired, you give in to ideas that you gave up decades ago. So you have to be practically balanced in order to deal with the changes of the world, because that will give you a stronger mind and intelligence. The other thing to develop resilience is you have to be internally committed. What do I mean by that? You have to find something you want to do in this life for Krishna to which you have such a deep internal commitment, which inspires you, which is like your alarm clock in the morning. One devotee used to tell me, the best alarm clock is purpose. The best alarm clock is purpose. Because when your eyes wake up in the morning and you're internally committed, you have a purpose in life, then that inspiration takes you beyond all the obstacles. So if you want to be resilient and deal with all the changes of this world and remain inspired in your journey, you have to find something that you can be internally committed to. And the final thing is spiritually inspired. If you have good rounds, I always remember Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj would come to the manor, and one thing I really learned from him, and actually one thing I really learned when I came to Chaupati, was the importance of really giving your heart and mind and attention to japa in the morning. And he used to say, if you get this right, everything else will be all right. And so when we have strong hearing and chanting, when we're really going deeper in our sadhana, in our spiritual practices, then we'll find that that spiritual inspiration also generates a resilience against the changes of this world. So yes, the world is always changing. But if you're emotionally connected, if you're psychophysically situated, if you're practically balanced, if you're internally committed, and if you're spiritually inspired, then you'll find that those five things help you to remain steady on the journey, no matter what upheavals take place around you.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you, Maharaj, for that five punchlines. I would say you gave us. Maharaj, I wish to ask you so many beautiful questions here, but I'm just strong with so many questions from the chat. So let me pick one of that for you right now, and then I'll come back with many more from my own book. One's a very practical thing. I think so. It's come from the Chaupati Brahmachari Ashram. And they were mentioning to me, Prabhu, Sutapa Prabhu, or our Swayam Bhagavan Keshav Maharaj now. So we see you as the same person from outside, but since a few months, you have taken a sannyas order of life. So externally, you are saying that things have not changed much. But what's the experience you are experiencing some kind of a joy or some kind of inner experience in your life, and the change in the way people are looking at you and the way you are supposed to now deal with the world? Can you share some experiences of the recent experience of after this really big change, external change?
Yeah, it does. Life has changed. I mean, we're all here on the call and we're all friends. So I can be very honest with you. It's strange sometimes, you know, you wake up in the morning one day after you've taken initiation and Vaishnavas are offering obeisances to you. Every time you're in a program, you're brought to the front. Every time you go somewhere, you're expected to share something. And people reveal their hearts and minds. Of those things were already there in my life before. But naturally, sannyas, my spiritual master said the sannyas danda is like an amplifier. So it means everything you were doing before, it amplifies it 100 times. So if you are preaching, your preaching is 100 times. If you're getting respect of a certain degree, it's 100 times. And he said to me something interesting. He said, the only way you can survive as a sannyasi is that you have to give more than you receive. You have to give more than you receive. So if people are giving you so much encouragement, praise, respect, if they're giving you donations, so many things, then you have to give them more. You have to serve more. So it has been a change of life. But in one sense, as I said, life hasn't changed. Someone asked me, like, what new problems do you have now that you didn't have before? And if I thought about it, I think the problems are also the same, but just in a different way. Like, for example, when I joined the temple, one of my obstacles was pride, because I knew a few Bhagavad Gita shlokas and, you know, I knew more than my friends and family. So I became proud. And now as a sannyasi, what's my obstacle? Pride, because people give you respect, people bow down to you. So the same obstacle is there, but just in a different way. When I was 21 and I joined the ashram, one of my obstacles was complexity of life. You're 21, you have so many decisions to make, so many plans for the future. Now, what's my obstacle? Complexity. But what kind of complexity? Managerial issues, mediating different things, complex life. So if I look at it, you know, in one sense, the obstacles have not changed. But I'll just say this one final thing. And I think this is relevant for sannyas, but I think this is relevant for anyone in any journey to take note of. One of the most profound things I experienced since accepting the sannyas life is the power of the good wishes of the Vaishnavas. That I felt as though when I took some kind of small risk in whatever I could in my life, I made some sense of a sacrifice to try to serve Krishna in a better way, then that was reciprocated with by the Vaishnavas in terms of them giving many, many blessings and many, many good wishes. And I think the greatest thing I've experienced in this last few months is the power of the blessings and good wishes of the devotees. And therefore I feel that my spiritual life, of course I have a long way to go, but I feel very, very grateful and happy in the way it's going. And that's all because of the blessings of the devotees. So, and how do you get the blessings of the devotees? When they see that you're trying to make some step to serve in a better way, then the Vaishnavas are very kind. And so I think that's been a profound change, the blessings of the devotees in greater quantities.
Thank you, Maharaj, for that wonderful answer. Really, it was very heart-touching to hear from you your experience as a the new role in the community there. Maharaj, can I ask you one question from one devotee from UK? This devotee is asking, Hare Krishna Keshav Maharaj, thank you so much for your association in the UK. The cost of living is increasing here, and therefore devotees will need to now find out alternative roles to be able to pay for the basic needs. Maharaj, how do we cope with the change? Because the need to fulfill basic needs will be more prominent than our spiritual advancement.
Yeah. Well, you see, the first thing is a devotee knows how to use every situation to take shelter of Krishna more. When we face challenge, like, yeah, there may be a financial crisis, a career crisis, the first and foremost thing a devotee should do is learn that now in this crisis, I have to take more shelter of Krishna. I have to chant with more intensity. I have to pray to Krishna with more desperation. And so everything of this world should push us to take shelter more. That's the first and foremost thing. And if you do that, then in every crisis, you'll make so much advancement, because in every crisis, you'll be taking more and more shelter of Krishna. And that's what Krishna does. You see, Vrindavan was a peaceful place. And then what happened is Krishna came into the lives of the Brajabasis, and Krishna said, why are you worshipping Indra? You should worship Govardhan. Everything was going nicely. Everything was peaceful. Indra was getting his offerings. And then Krishna came in, and Krishna said, no, don't do it. And as soon as they followed Krishna, all hell broke loose. So you see, in our life, Krishna doesn't facilitate shanti. This is a very important point. Krishna in your life is not facilitating shanti. Krishna is facilitating prema, bhakti. And in order for you to get prema and bhakti, sometimes you have to go through some chaos. Because it's in that chaos that you realize there's nothing in this world for me. There's nothing to hold on to materially. I have to just hold on to Krishna. So in the UK here, we're in a cost of living crisis. Everything is becoming more expensive, gas, electricity, interest rates may rise, and everyone is wondering how they will survive. And naturally, we have to be practical. We have to put some time and effort into creating a solution for that. But remember, devotional service is apratihata, is uninterrupted. So there can be no material impediment. So in all of those situations of intensity, at least in the morning when you're doing your sadhana, try to do it with more desperation and more reliance on Krishna. And in that way, Krishna will inspire a situation in your life in which you will meet your needs. And eventually, you will have more opportunity to serve him. So, what can I say? I'm not a financial advisor, so I can't give you like a quick way how to get out of this problem of the cost of living. But what I can tell you is that if you focus on Krishna, then in all the chaos of the world, you will find the internal anchor. And ultimately, on the material level, everything will work out.
Thank you, Maharaj. And while you were answering this beautiful question from one devotee in the UK, I remember about the beautiful life of Shruti Dharam Prabhu and also Jankinath Prabhu, right? And yes, we also got one question about how we saw these great personalities having such a powerful, wonderful life, and when they heard about their disease, how very positively they took it. They made a change in their life and went on to give us a powerful lesson even while leaving this world. Could you also share some wisdom you learned from this two great personalities?
Yeah. Shruti Dharma Prabhu used to also give me three sutras, and he was the personification of this. He said, number one, adjust your expectation. Number two, accept your situation. And number three, aspire for connection. And all the great devotees, they did this. The first thing is they didn't have any false expectations of the world. They knew the world is wired in this way. You know, sometimes we get surprised if someone becomes sick. We get surprised if there's some upheaval in the world. We get surprised if some relationship challenge comes. Of course, we're not saying that those things are easy, but in one sense, a devotee should never be surprised because they've adjusted their expectation. They know this is the nature of the world. This is what's going to happen. This is reality of the material sphere. So I saw with Shruti Dharma Prabhu, with Janaki Nath Prabhu, that they had adjusted their expectations when they were told they had cancer, because they didn't have those expectations that, you know, life should go in a certain way. They were able to accept it. I was with Janaki Nath Prabhu when the occupational therapist came and directly in front of him said, "You have 3 months to live." And it was heartbreaking for me, but I saw for him how, because he had adjusted his expectation, he was okay with it. He knew this is the way life is. This is the way the world is wired. The second thing is accept your situation. They didn't just accept their situation, but they embraced it. You see, a devotee thinks, when a situation comes, a devotee thinks, how can I utilize this to get deeper in Krishna consciousness? You see, when a challenge comes, there can be two types of devotees. One type of devotee, when a challenge comes, they think, oh my God, this is going to affect my Krishna consciousness badly in this way, this way, this way, and this way. Another devotee, they think, when a situation comes, they think, what are the unique opportunities in this situation that I can use in order to get closer to Krishna? In your life, you can have two mentalities. Either you can start getting nervous about everything that's going to go wrong, or you can start getting excited about everything that could go right. So, in a cost of living crisis, one type of devotee will look at it and say, it's going to affect my Krishna consciousness. I'm going to have to work longer. I'm going to have to spend time doing this, which is going to take away from my devotional life. They can look at everything that could go wrong. But another type of devotee could look at the cost of living crisis and say, maybe this is Krishna telling me, maybe I need to reduce the way in which I live. Maybe I need to simplify things to take the pressure off needing to earn so much. In this way, I'll actually be able to get closer to Krishna. In other words, you can start approaching it in a different way. And with Janaki Nath and Shruti Prabhu, I saw that very much, that they didn't just adjust their expectation, but they accepted their situation and they embraced it, that there is some unique thing in this situation that will take me closer to Krishna. And now I only need to find out what that thing is. And the third thing is aspire for connection. They took shelter of Krishna. There will be two times in your life when you will be able to understand spiritually where you are really at. The first one is what you do when you're alone. And the second thing is what you do when you're in trouble. These are the two things which will define you as a devotee. What do you do when you're alone, when no one's watching? And what do you do when you're in trouble? And because they had such a fire of devotion, you see, if I have a lamp here, just a small ghee lamp, and a gush of wind comes, then it will extinguish the lamp. But if there's a raging forest fire and the wind comes, then the fire will get even bigger. So our duty is to ensure that that lamp of bhakti, that intensity of devotion, before the winds of change, before the winds of challenges, before the winds of complexity of the material world, before they come, you need to make sure that that lamp of your devotion goes like a forest fire. Because if it does, then when all of those things come, your intensity will go exponentially. But if you haven't, then all of those challenges, they can start to really affect your bhakti. So they were able to do these things. This is living theology.
Yes.
I'll just say one final thing on that, Baladev. If devotees are interested, they can go on. I'm not doing a plug here, but just because it's relevant, they can go to keshavaswami.com, and there are many books there and for free download. And one of them is called Loving Life, Embracing Death. And it's just a short memory that we made of Janakinath Prabhu. And I feel if devotees read this, they will get some inspiration about how to use the most shocking changes that can come in someone's life. What can be more shocking than telling a 36-year-old they only have 3 months to live? It doesn't get much more shocking than that. But you can learn from that book about the mentality of how a devotee faces it.
Yes, Maharaj. I would say that the lives of such devotees are, in fact, the extensions of the pages of Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
We see how Parikshit Maharaj, the whole Bhagavatam came when he had only 7 days of his life remaining, and he was so serious about understanding Krishna consciousness much more than before. In similar fashion, we have our devotees in ISKCON now, giving us an understanding of how devotees within our community, they give us a lesson of being very focused in Krishna consciousness, and when right time comes, when they are to take decisions, they really pour in all that they had learned from their acharyas, from the devotee community, and they bring the whole teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam in clear, practical ways. Thank you for that wonderful answer, Maharaj. And I had not read your book, this one. I definitely will download and read through that book also, Maharaj. Maharaj, and many devotees are asking about various questions on other books. One question which also was in my mind many, many years back, it has come here in form of a question from one devotee. Maharaj, how did you get that idea, beautiful idea of the first book you wrote? I think so, the first book, the Bhagavad Gita, the acronym. How the acronym came into picture? Because it's so difficult to get the whole chapter and that to an acronym form and in one page, and just the whole understanding of chapter. That must be really, you must have gone through a lot of days pondering over not just the acronym, but even the essence of each chapter. Maharaj, could you share something on that beautiful book you wrote, Maharaj?
Yeah, thank you so much. Of course, our books are just a bridge to Srila Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada gave us the Bhagavad Gita, such an amazing translation of the Gita. And then devotees like Burijan Prabhu very wonderfully in Surrender Unto Me gave such a beautiful breakdown of how to study the Gita. And all I tried to do was try to encourage people to go to those books through my book or my little piece of writing, what I was able to do. And so I thought, if devotees in one word can begin to encapsulate every single chapter of the Gita, then that means if they remember 18 words, then they can remember every single chapter of the Gita in detail. And so I set about with that mission in mind. And of course, I don't want to sit here and tell you I'm like some kind of divinely inspired individual. But somehow, when I began writing, Krishna just inspired these acronyms to come about. And somehow they just kept fitting with each and every chapter. So, for example, the acronym for chapter number 2 is Gita, which makes sense because chapter 2 is contents of the Gita summarized, and G stands for Guru because Arjuna approaches Krishna as the Guru. What does Krishna teach him? I, what his real identity is. And then Arjuna's thinking, but how does that change my life? So then T, two dharmas, Krishna teaches him, now you know you're a soul, you have a dharma in this world, but a Sanatana dharma. And A, Krishna tells him, if you do your two dharmas perfectly, Atmaram, you become a self-realized soul. So then it fits perfectly because you get the four sections of the Gita. The word Gita reminds you of that chapter title, and it helps you to understand why that chapter is called Contents of the Gita Summarized, because the acronym shows that it begins at Guru and it ends with becoming an Atmaram. This is the complete contents of the Gita summarized, the complete journey of spiritual life. So we began writing like this, and then these ideas just came, you know. Chapter 3 is all about karma yoga, and the acronym was TREE. And that fit because the tree is like the ideal example of a karma yogi, a detached worker. A tree gives fruits but never tastes them. A tree gives shelter regardless of who it is. A tree does its duty all year round. A tree, if it's cut down, it always grows back. So you think, like, a tree, this is like the perfect karma yogi. And chapter number 3 is about karma yoga. So that means it's a good acronym for chapter number 3. And then TREE perfectly encapsulate the four sections. So it just came about. Krishna inspires us. But ultimately, Srila Prabhupada's really given us the knowledge, and the Vaishnavas have given the study guides. And I guess what we did was just put some kind of packaging on it so it's easy to remember. But that's what we tried to do.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. So, I was going through some questions, more or less many of the questions which devotees have asked. You have covered in your answers, Maharaj. We want to also share with our audience that it is not just now Maharaj is available for any queries. You can reach out to His Holiness Swayam Bhagwan Kesho Maharaj through his social media platform. Here is the display. You can be on the Insta, or you can be on the website or the Facebook page. And you can reach out to Maharaj anytime you want. And Maharaj will definitely get back to you sooner or later with his wisdomful answer. So Maharaj, time to wrap up, and we hope that you come soon to India and to Chopati and give your, we're online now, but give you offline association. Any important messages from your side to the devotees you are joining today? You already given a lot.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Maybe next time I can interview you and you can give us your insights on this topic. I'm so happy to be with all of you. I was mentioning to Baladev Prabhu, all the devotees of Chaupati, that practically since coming in 2002, I've not been back to Chaupati. I came maybe for one day at one point for overnight quick visit. But practically for 20 years, I've not been back to Chaupati, which is such an inspirational place for us, and really helped us build a foundation in our spiritual life. And we really appreciate all the devotees there and everything they do. We are kind of built on your mercy, and we learn so many things from all of you and continue to. So just to say thank you so much for everything you've done, you continue to do. And if it's Krishna's plan, then hopefully in the future we can all meet together and have some Hari Kirtan and Hari Katha. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.